Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast and week two of our season-long series, The Edge. The Edge is designed to give you some tips, some ideas, some methods for getting that little extra out of your team and getting your team that winning edge this year. And joining me as our guest host for week two again is Rob Everett. Rob, great to have you back in week two of the season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Keith. Hope everyone's first couple weeks of the season is going well, and hopefully we can give you something that that you can steal, something small that you can get into your team right now.
It's funny, Rob, last week we talked about getting the edge in week one and preparing, and a lot of it is adjust and adapt. And we were talking about film breakdown for that week one opponent. And, you know, you get scrimmages, you get a film from last year, maybe there's limited stuff that you could see, it's vanilla. And so I do some work for a local team here, a high school team, breaking down some film for them and doing some advanced scouting. And I'm looking at the week two opponent this particular week and break them down. They're a wing T team. We're a spread team. There's about 15 snaps in three games that actually show us how they might align and play our formations. And I'm like, man, this 15 snaps is not enough for a breakdown. We talked about how you get creative with finding those things. And so huddle, max preps, player highlights is what I dug through to find formations that they lined up against that were similar to ours. So sometimes you got to do whatever you can to get the edge, Rob. And I actually did some of those things we talked about last week.
Oh, Coach, that is outstanding. You know, you got to ride the fine line of creepy and creative. Those are the two things when you're stalking to find the information. And that is terrific. But there's some good stuff you can pull off player highlights, no doubt.
Absolutely. So this week on the edge, we're going to focus on the evaluation process, especially in terms of how we're going to take that approach throughout the year. And there's a lot of things you can do and chart and grade players on. But I think the primary thing we're going to talk about here today is that you have to be consistent with it. You have to be able to do it. And you don't want it to turn into some kind of accounting project as you try to figure out how many helmet stickers you get, how many stars go on this chart, what's the player's grade. So simple wins, as Brian Kite likes to say all the time on this podcast. So we're going to try to keep things framed out as here's a simple way to do this. So if you want to have production charts, if you want to award helmet stickers, there's some ideas that help you very quickly get to what those awards are going to be weekly so that you don't spend Saturday or Sunday trying to figure out how many points did this kid get or that kid get. So, Rob, I'll kick it over to you to start us out with that first idea of how we do this, how we keep the evaluation process something that is very usable for our players, but efficient and effective for what we're doing as coaches.
You know, I think that is very well said. And I think, you know, really there's a good lesson to be learned in all things, even game planning. You know, and I tell people all the time when they ask about fronts and coverages, I always just tell them the line I use is from Forgetting Sarah Marshall is do less. And this is one of those things also. I think early in the season, we have really good ideas about, you know, we're going to have this board and we're going to do this for our players and we're going to evaluate this. But as the season goes along, you know, you used a great line there. It becomes an accounting project and you get away from some of the important things because this does take time and it is an investment. So if you're nervous about it, chop off a couple of those things. But all that being said, it is extremely important that you have evaluation of your players. And I think the goal thing is a little separate, but it's kind of in that same thing that did you evaluate what you wanted to in the season. So in some way, you need to be evaluating your players, and it needs to be open and transparent on what you're evaluating and what the criteria is for achievement, and that the players know this. But the consistency factor, Coach, like you said, is most important.
Yeah, Rob, that's a memorable line from that movie, Do Less. And really, that's the key. I mean, you have to think about, okay, you're all gung-ho, you're enthusiastic right now, you want to do all these things for the season. How does that look week 12? Is it something you're going to track on? Because if you go out, you know, right off the bat and say, this is an important thing, we're going to track on it, like the first time it is set aside because you guys were too busy breaking down an opponent or something like that, and it doesn't get done, or it gets done in a way that is, you know, not as detailed maybe as the first time you did it, then it starts to lose its effect, and really it becomes meaningless, and it just takes up time then. So you want something that is going to be impactful throughout the season. So Rob, what types of evaluation are we looking at here? Let's just start with one.
All right, so I look at, and I'm going to look at this from a defensive standpoint, and you know this, Keith, I've been on both sides of the ball, so I have one that I tried offensively, but I think I really have a good process defensively to kind of look at this. And I look at the evaluation of a defender in two ways. Number one is the play-by-play grade, and then the second one is productivity. Because especially, you know, defensively, a lot of things can go wrong in a given play, but a defender can be productive. You know, a defender can be doing the complete wrong thing and pick off a ball and score a touchdown, and that is productive. That is going towards it. So we need to look at that as, you know, individually, that's not a good play from a team standpoint, but on the play, the player was productive. So that's how we look at this. And I do this in Excel. You're going to have copies of both these things that we can send out, but we make a productivity chart, which has different point awards and negativity pieces. And then there's also the game, the play-by-play grade, which is just 0, 1, and 2 on each play that the player is in. And what I think those two things do is it gives a good picture of play-by-play grade, kind of demonstrates consistency. And then the productivity chart, which awards points for tackles, which removes points for, you know, missed assignments and missed tackles. And we'll go deeper into this in a little bit, but that shows, you know, are they factoring in the game? You know, a person can do everything that they're supposed to, you know, but are they making the plays? And that's what the productivity chart is there to assess.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that in a lot of areas, it's the grading of the technical side, but ultimately, you know, what was the productivity that went along with it? Because a player can be out there and grade out what looks like very good, but actually not produce anything in the game. And ultimately, both sides of the ball, everywhere, guys need to produce. You know, going along with that, I look at, you know, how I've graded on the offensive side of the ball. And really, I got to a system where we kind of would break down each play into phases that of, you know, what's going to affect that position. For example, offensive line, it was footwork, fit, and finish. So the right footwork to get to the block, the correct fit with hands, could be where the feet are, could be the shoulder, and then how that block is finished, because the defender is going to do something to get out of it. So the finish of it. And that was twofold. That helped us really figure out what do we need to work in practice. Where are we having our errors, right? Are our guys great on the footwork and the fit and losing the finish? Are they bad on the footwork and that causes some problems down the line? So it helps you identify that, and then we would break down kind of the grades in each of those areas and give them an overall grade. But the other thing I would look at too was star blocks, is what I called them. And that was essentially our productivity. And for us, a star block was going to be one that sprung the ball carrier, or maybe it was a receiver on a screen, whoever it might have been, for a bigger play. A star block is a knockdown. Somehow you get that guy off of his feet. So at the college level, we were allowed to cut. So it was the cut block. It was a pancake. And then one other was the out-of-the-picture block, which means that within the frame, and usually this was going to be the tight view from the end zone, that offensive guy blocked his guy clean out of the picture. And so those really become some of the more productive blocks that they can, again, be good on some of those things, but not really help. So we want to make sure that we had the footwork, fit, and finish and star blocks. And, you know, to me, that was something then, how do you award an offensive lineman? Well, how many blocks does he have? You know, those essentially, maybe it's if you get 3, you get a, you know, star and award on your helmet. And we'll get into helmet awards in a minute. But for me, looking at things kind of in phases like that was very effective in grading and told the player a lot more than just putting a plus or a minus on his sheet for the play. Because that, to me was too comprehensive to say, okay, why did I get a minus? What did I get long? And I don't want all these longhand notes in there either. I should be able to indicate something on his grade chart, so when he's watching film, he's focusing on a particular thing and he can see the error there.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think those star block awards, I think that is terrific, especially the cut one. I know there's high school states that allow cutting as well. No, those are great. And, you know, my time in Memphis coaching the offensive line, I used a similar one. And just to kind of add some things that are in there, what I like about those three phases is, you know, for the most part, the offensive player, the offensive lineman controls two of those three. You know, the technique, there's so many things that come into it with the defender and your position and things like that. But, you know, your assignment, you control that, whether you get a correct assignment or not. You do what you're supposed to. And also with the finish part of it, you control whether you finish no matter what happened in the play. You know, you could have done everything wrong up to that point, but if you're chasing someone around, you know, and showing proper finish and your feet are going, you know, from an offensive standpoint, or you're looking for that next block, you know, those are things that you can control. And I think when you assess people on the things that they can control, those are the ones that really can be fixed.
So from the position, we start looking at a bigger picture here, and we can look at the unit and the production of the unit. And I've had some great charts, Rob, that put up on big boards in our locker room, and we tracked every week, and there might be 8 to 10 different things that we're looking at. Some of them are meaningful statistics. Some of them tell us how we're doing as a unit. I always, at the beginning, the first one would put win and make sure they understood that the rest don't matter unless we get that one. So, you know, ultimately all those things look good, but you have to consider, how do they affect mindset of the team? I mean, you want all your units pulling together. You don't want to create a situation, and you have to be careful of it. It's really all in the delivery, but you don't want to create a situation where you're putting things up on the board, you're not talking about them, they're just a visual there, and your players start assuming things. Wow, man, defense, look at that. They had a lot of stars this week on their chart. They had a lot of checks this week on their chart. Offense, man, not so good. Man, the offense isn't carrying their weight. Man, look at the special teams. They didn't have anything this week. And, you know, however that might sort out, again, if you're not handling those things the right way, they could become detrimental to the culture of your team and how they view things and start some of the finger pointing. So I think they're good. I think you should use them to those things that really matter and that you're tracking on. But I think you have to be very definitive on how you do that. And I can think back to, you know, my early days of doing it. Honestly, I think I saw Jim Tressel in a chart he had, and I really liked it, so I adopted that. And, I mean, eventually, you know, after we brought it back and said we want to use this, we actually started thinking, all right, how does this affect us? What do we really believe in here? And I think we tweaked it a little bit. So there's that copy and paste element that you got to be careful of. But I think ultimately, whatever you use, you have to think about, how does this affect the overall mentality of our team?
Yeah, I think that is exactly right. Because while it can produce a great visual, there can be create some anxiety between the units as well. I think that's a really good point. What we did in my last season at Bridgewater, I thought this was a really good idea by Coach Clark, our head coach. What we came up with our big board, you know, win obviously needs to be there. But then we chose 3 or 4 things that were important to us as the unit, but they had to connect to the other unit at the same time. So what are those situations that if we achieve will set up the other unit? So we chose kind of our money situation, but all of them were in celebration. If we achieve them properly, the offense would be getting something positive out of it. And a good example I can give you is we had a goal about if someone was backed up, if they were inside the 10, we were going to get a 3 and out. And our, you know, play calls were usually on the minus side of the field. We just kind of play football. But if you were backed up inside the 10, we were making calls to get you into a 3 and out situation, because more often than not, you know, you're going to give the offense before it's 3 and out inside the 10. You're going to give the offense a plus side start. So it was things like that. And then the offense had some things where, you know, did they get a first down? Same kind of thing. If an offense gets a first down, no matter where they start, usually that's going to help out the field position for the defense, you know, which is obvious. So I think if you're creative with those things, you can really come up with some good ones that, even though they are unit specific, they can connect the three phases of the game in a way that you're looking at this where I'm trying to achieve this because it's my goal, but it's my goal because it's going to help out my teammate on the other side of the ball. And I think those have been some good things that have been in there. And then the other thing that I will say on the unit goals is think about those game-changing situations. And there's some great studies on college football and NFL and statistics about, you know, what are the most important things in the game. You know, it used to be turnover margin was the biggest one. And I think that's starting to go away, that it's now getting into explosion plays. You know, the number of explosion plays are the things that decide. You know, turnover margin is not as big of a deal anymore if you look statistically on win and loss. So there really is no right answer. If someone was starting this, though, I would say just choose, you know, something that is really manageable, you know, one or two things per unit that you're going to be able to see. But ultimately, win has to be part of it.
Yeah, when I was at BW, our head coach, John Snell, he realized in his time as assistant, they had those goals on the board. They were the separate unit goals. And he felt it was, you know, either explicit finger pointing or kind of those grumblings, right? That we did our job, you didn't do yours. And, you know, as I mentioned, that kind of attitude is, you know, fracturing your team if it carries on. So he looked at what can we do to really track on things that affect offense, defense, and special teams. So he came up with 8, and I thought these were really good. So the first one was win, which is obvious. The next one was, I know you just mentioned, it's not as big of a stat, but we felt it was important. The takeaways and turnovers together. All right, so we're also, in this one, what I liked, it was not just the fumbles and interceptions. We also counted 3 and outs for both sides. Right, so 4 3-and-outs for the offense equaled a giveaway, and the same thing for our defense. 4 3-and-outs was a takeaway, so those were important. And then, you know, the special teams certainly factor in there as well. Fewer penalties was one we wanted to track on, pretty self-explanatory. Field position battle, starting field position for both ourselves and the opponents, and we wanted to have a better one. And when you look at field position battle, that's what everybody's doing, right? You can't necessarily say, oh, we did ours in this, you didn't do yours. You know, when you calculate that, there's one number and everybody factors into that. The big plays. So all these where usually you chart them separately for offense and defense, we wanted more big plays than them. So for offense, we counted it as a pass of 20 yards. A special teams, it was a touchdown, a two-point play, a block kick, defense, tackle for loss or sack, touchdown. Special teams, other things, punts inside the 10, onside kick recovery, fumble recoveries, stop fake kicks, executing a fake kick, a punt over 50 yards, a field goal over 40 yards, returns over 20 yards on kick return, over 10 on punt. So factoring all those, and they're easy to go through. This is not an accounting nightmare. Just going through and saying, okay, here's all of ours on offense. Here's all of them on defense. Here's all of them on special teams. Here's what the other team did. If we have more, we won that one. Scoring zone efficiency was the next one. So looking at the red zone, 20 and in, we wanted a higher scoring efficiency than the opponent. It wasn't just the offense or the defense. It was both of those, and certainly then, you know, you look at special teams, and again, the opportunity to maybe block a kick, force a miss, those kinds of things. Outgain the opponent. When you think about that, again, outgain the opponent would, for us, be rushing, passing, and returns for each team. Put them all together. Did we have more than them? Again, it's a team concept. It's not a singular one delineating anybody, and we didn't break them down. It was just, did we outgain the opponent? And the last one was very subjective, and we let the coaches decide this week to week. You know, I remember as the end of every one of these meetings, as we went through our production, compete for 4 quarters. And I mean, we went around the table and every coach gave his opinion on why, and ultimately the head coach would make the final decision on that. But again, I thought, you know, with what Coach Snell did, very well thought out team objectives that affect all phases of the game. I think when you can look at something like that and put your system together that way, you have something that's very effective and really helps promote that team concept.
Yeah, there's no question. Those are outstanding. I think all of those are terrific ways to look at it.
So Rob, let's move from here and think about now maybe the award phase of this. So, you know, we've put those checks on the board or on our charts in our locker room, whatever it might have been. Now, how are we looking at the individual portions on how we award these things? How are we putting those stars or those little logos on our helmet?
Yeah, I think this is the part where it gets, you know, it can get away from you. There's no question. So, you know, what we did at Bridgewater was Coach Clark's big line was one for the win. So if we won, everybody got one helmet sticker. And then the rest of it was really based on our unit goals. So we tried, and I firmly believe this, that you try to make your helmet stickers at about the unit, or, you know, if you want to break it down a little bit more, make it about the position group rather than the individual, because there's nothing in our game that's individual. So if we make it about the group, we have a better way to go. But, you know, something that Coach Clark did was we only gave out helmet stickers if the game was won. So unless you got that win, you got the one for the win, there weren't any other helmet stickers that were coming. Now, obviously, there's pluses and minuses to that approach. But I like, on a Monday evaluation, before you close the book on that previous opponent, you have your accounting, you have all your stickers ready, and make it a celebration so that the players understand why they're getting these, and that, you know, you're making an incentive. Hey, this is a big deal to us, and let's put our best foot forward here.
Yeah, and again, I think you can look at those, you know, exactly like I talked about. Maybe it's, you know, one for the win, like you said. Maybe it's we then accomplished all those goals on our chart for another one. And then, you know, I still think there's those individual opportunities for just some of those outstanding plays. You know, was what, you know, for your offensive line, maybe it is that guy who had those, you know, for us, the star block. We didn't have the helmet awards, but I created like a virtual helmet for them. And each week, you know, I'd put that graphic up and show where they were at. So for them, it was the star blocks. And, you know, maybe that's something you do keep in between your team. I know there were teams where, you know, we decided not to use those. But I also wanted to designate outstanding play and those behaviors that we wanted on the field. I wanted to recognize and award those. So, you know, like I said, that star system for blocks, you know, that would call it out. So I will share some notes in a previous podcast in our show notes with exactly how Ohio State would award their Buckeye leaves under Jim Tressel. And I'm not sure if that was carried on by Urban or not. I think that system kind of has developed over time on how they award those. But I thought there were some unique things in what got you one of those decals on your helmet. And obviously that's a huge part of their culture that they award the Buckeye leaves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Keith, you're kind of hitting on it when talking through this. It's a fine line and a slippery slope. And you really have to evaluate, you know, who your team is, because, you know, it might not be the same year to year. You know, what is your team able to handle? But you're, and the same thing, you know, it's about the team and it's about the unit, but there is individual success that needs to be celebrated. You know, so balancing that out, you know, I think the coaches need to do a good job of evaluating their evaluation process, and being deliberate in those things. And I like that idea of finding it the way that everybody else does it, and then, you know, really think about what is it that your team can, you know, can handle. What would they get excited about? What can you do as a staff logistically, and really make it your own, but make those choices deliberate.
And the other thing, Rob, I guess I want to point out is evaluating, getting into the specifics of evaluating things like on the offensive side of the ball, some scheme things. And, you know, I think that goes to the defensive side of the ball. And we've talked quite a bit about tackling. We'll probably save the details of that for another one here in evaluating the tackle. But I'll kick this one off on the offensive side of the ball. And something I really liked to do, I space it out, you know, middle of camp and then end of camp. And then I might come back to it throughout the season, like after week one, midway through the season, and then heading into maybe that final stretch, like week 7 or 8. And evaluating where we're at. And basically what I did is put together a chart. So I look at the example I have here. And again, all the things we're talking about will be shared in our show notes or on our blogs. But our offensive line, I would break down each of our blocking schemes by the techniques that each player had to use. So for that, let's say, center, for example, on the power play, he might have, let's say, six things that he constantly has to work on that occur again and again. And simply, there was three columns right next to it that I had. The first was excel, the next one was secure, and the last one was needs work. And, you know, excel means that this guy is really good at it. You know, he's giving top level of performance. It's textbook, it's clinic material. And we see that from him a high percentage of the time. Secure means that he's pretty good at it. You know, it's definitely over 80% in how his performance is on this. And we know that, you know, certainly we're going to have to keep working at it, getting better, but we feel that he's secure on those things. And then lastly, the needs work would be anything underneath that. And really, again, as I look through in this chart, and, you know, some of it is looking at film and evaluating those schemes and putting together the cutups. But the other thing is that then drives the practice. So I know, for example, if he's not very good on tipping a player out on a clog or when there's a stalemate, then that's what we want to work this particular week. And I would not only just evaluate it myself, I would give it to our players. I'd give them that chart and take a few minutes, think through your play, think through all these things you need to do. If you have to think about it a lot, I tell them you need to put it down as needs work. So it was about their confidence in those particular things. And, you know, the practice then really is driven. Vince Digitano says it all the time. The practice plan is written by the player. So this was a tool for me to help evaluate the scheme and look at what we need to do week to week to get better. And again, did I use it every single week? No, because I think it would bog me down a little bit, but something I would review again from time to time. I know when we had a bye week, definitely would look at those things. So using these tools, you know, as a coach, if they're not the things that you're posting in the locker room all the time, space them out, make it efficient with your workflow. The idea is, though, it helps you be more effective in what you're doing to prepare your players and to develop them.
Coach, that is 100%. And I think there's some key pieces there. The player self-evaluation is invaluable. And that's something that can be done. The play-by-play grade, you know, a player can evaluate themselves on 0, 1, 2. You know, they can do stuff like that. But you really get an idea of what the players are thinking, what, you know, the players assessing themselves is really them assessing you as well. Because if they're saying, I have a good grasp of this, and you agree, you know, then you're on the right path. If they're saying that they have a good grasp of it and you don't agree, something's, you know, there's the disconnect there in the instruction. So getting their feedback is exactly right. And then the other thing is the creation of practice. This is totally true, and this is why evaluation is so important, and why coming up with numbers and ways to quantify things are important, because now you're making decisions off of real information. And you mentioned the tackling thing, and you know how I feel about it. But our tackling grades, in broken down into five fights, that drives what we're going to work on, both on as an individual, as a position group, and as a unit. And also what we may not need to work on or what's not happening. And it's not, oh, I think this is. It's, I know, because here's the evaluation that's there. And like you're saying, from an offensive line standpoint, you know, these are the blocks we continually are executing, you know, correctly or incorrectly. How does that factor in there? So I think the whole thing on this numbers and evaluation, it really will make us better coaches, because we're making deliberate decisions rather than things that we've done off in the past just because that's the way that we do them. Or just what we think is happening based on film. Now we're putting data together with the sniff test of, this is what I think, and now here, based on the numbers, this confirms or disproves my thoughts. And how do we work that together to put the best plan forward for the players?
And Rob, in that idea of advancing this, you know, you talked about, well, this is what we do. This is what we've always done. I mean, really looking at new ways to, again, make your workflow more efficient, more effective. And you're a big believer in the free technology that's out there. So I know when we look at this aspect of it, of evaluation, Google Forms is a big thing for you.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I'm involved with a lot of different things in football. And the one thing I will not be involved in is sales, because I don't, you know, really want to go that route. I want to be, you know, what are the tools that are out there that are available for everybody? And the Google Form stuff is awesome, because you can really get a lot of information, and it's basically a survey tool that you can upload video in GIF form, because you can't upload just a video there. You can upload pictures, but you can find out a lot from your players. And what I've found in using Google Forms is that it's a disarming way to engage with them. You'll get a lot of honesty when they're answering on their phone or on a computer. And you'll get, a different response than when you ask them a question face-to-face. And I think there's a variety of reasons for it. Number one is the comfortability part of it. But then there's also the sort of feels anonymous, whether it is or isn't. You know, I think you can really get some good truth there. And then just the straight up information that you can pull off this, you're able to see when they're answering these things that you send out. And like, are you doing it in the middle of the night when you should be asleep? Are you doing it right before a meeting? So obviously you didn't prepare in the right way. And the way I always use these were never, you know, you need to get 100% or you don't play. That's not the way that we approach this. We connected this with achievement and productivity on the field. So if you're a guy that isn't doing their install Google form, but you're achieving on the field, you have a process that works for you, you know, you won't hear anything from the coaching staff on you need to do this, you need to do this, because your process is working. But if those, and this is what usually happens, if someone's not doing their work to be a part of the process and they're not achieving on the field, you know, this is where we say, hey, your process isn't working here. Let's get ourselves in this way and get a part of our process and see how it goes. And that usually is there. But we're doing it with information behind us. We're coming at this with, Keith, you answered this 2 minutes before the meeting. Can you really say that you gave this your best shot? Because really, all the Google Forms that we send out should be able to be answered in under 5 minutes. But there's, you know, invaluable information that can be pulled from it that's not taxing for the player.
Yeah, and we talked about an in-season evaluation and, you know, mentioned Vince Digitano. He used that with his players to help get feedback on their coaching staff. They took over, like, I think 8 days before the season in 2018, Vince did as the head coach. And, I mean, obviously a lot of moving parts, things they needed to get straight with their culture. And he found that using those forms weekly and allowing players to give some feedback really helped them improve as a coaching staff and help them then get to a winning record in what is, you know, a very stressful takeover. So all kinds of applications for that. But I think the key is what you said right there. When are they answering it and how quickly can it be done? Again, this is not about bogging down players or coaches with more work. There's already enough work out there. It's about being efficient so that you can be effective.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Well, Rob, we will dig into the tackling portion of this in another podcast throughout this season. I think some great things on evaluation here and helping coaches sort through everything that happened this past week and being able to use that information to improve, get better, improve the culture of their team, etc. So thanks for sharing those ideas today, and I look forward to another week with you on the Edge.
Absolutely, Coach. Thanks for having me on. Numbers are what we do, so we need to make numbers a part of our decision-making.
Follow Coach Everett on Twitter at 9inthebox. That's spelled out N-I-N-E in the box. Follow me on Twitter at Coach K. Grabowski. Give us some ideas, some questions, etc. For all that we're doing and our team at USA Football, for coaches, go to at FBDEV Coach. And for the tackling system, which we mentioned here today, as well as our system for blocking and defeating blocks, head over to footballdevelopment.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.